Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Alarion Archives. I'm Josh Maltby, at Black Cloak DM on the social medias, and also the voice of Solinar Vakis.
Hi, everybody. I'm Alex Smith. I am the GM of Quid Pro Roll and the voice of everyone that is not Solinar Boat, Johannes, Koza, or the myriad of random shopkeepers.
I was about to follow that list up with Gazwin, Alucard, Tim E. Clockman.
Oh, yeah, no. So people who haven't listened to our show but are like also like GMs who run a show and stuff, when I tell them, I'm like, oh, yeah, I let my players randomly make up NPCs and drop in the look of horror on their faces. And I'm like, no, it's fine. It's fine. I promise. They know what they're doing.
They see, I think those people don't understand so much that this is a show first and a campaign second.
It is a campaign first and foremost for me. I don't know what you're doing.
Is it? I feel like we've had to redo whole episodes because you were like, I don't like how that section of campaign ran. That tells me it's show first.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
So it's been a while since we did any Alarion Archives stuff. Previously, we were talking about Tinkerhaven because Tinkerhaven was coming up soon and I needed to learn things about Solinar's homeland. For today's episode, I want to talk about something not that's upcoming, but that has occurred recently in the capturing and abandoning of Ilfeel, the red dragon priest that we met in Tinkerhaven at Lord Aethertwine's manor. Mm-hmm. Is that right? Yes. Mm-hmm. I remembered a name.
I'm so proud of you. I really like doing Alarion Archives. I'm excited to get back into doing these.
I think this is something that's good for us to just be doing in general because it helps me understand the world so much better.
Mostly because, listeners, you don't know this, but because Josh and I live together because we're, you know, married, there's a big giant box that I keep all my notes in that's electrified. So if Josh tries to go in and read any notes ahead of time, he gets an electric shock.
There was one time I got past the electric barrier, and just as I was putting my hand in the box, Alex shot me with a slingshot. I didn't even know. I guess she has cameras or something watching the box.
Yeah, it monitors the box if anyone gets near it. I get an alert on my phone.
I woke up 2 days later in the middle of the woods. I had to do a survival encounter on my way home. So
you were in the backyard, Josh. You were not in the Shenandoahs.
The woods. So I want to talk about Ilfeel today because she's kind of a character of interest. It seemed like there were romantic implications with Koza, but it's possible that he has completely beefed those. So I guess we'll have to see how that turns out.
Yeah, there we have had people who have already referred to Ilfeel as like Koza's girlfriend. And I'm like, ooh, they are not having a good time right now, relationship wise.
Yeah. So I'd like to learn a little bit more about Ilfeel because she's one of the most, I don't know, friendly chromatic dragon priests we've encountered.
I mean, she has tried to kill you, but she did feel like really bad about it.
She didn't want to kill us, though. Like most of the chromatic dragon priests we've encountered have wanted to kill us. So what was Ilfeel's childhood like?
What a 180. Yeah, she didn't want to kill us. So what was she like as a kid? It's just like such a jump.
Let's take it back to the beginning and figure out why she's such a nice person.
So the reason Ilfeel is the way that she is, other than she's just kind of a sweetie pie. Some people are just sweetie pies and Ilfeel is one of them. To Ilfeel, whose father and grandfather were both chromatic priests for the same dragon that she is, becoming a dragon priest is like inheriting the family business. It is something that her family raised her in. It is something, and for her, that's just normal. There is nothing to her that says what chromatic priests do is exploitive or evil, despite the fact that she does follow a red dragon, which are one of the more dangerous, one of the most powerful and most dangerous kinds of chromatics there are.
My understanding is that reds are known for their greed and malevolence. Yes,
they are. But when you think about it, for like the way that Ilfeel sort of contextualizes this, and she doesn't do this consciously, I want to be very clear, this is not a conscious thing that she's doing, But there are people who deeply object to, like, violence and murder and greed, but will work for companies that push those things more into the world. And they don't think about it that way. They're just like, I'm just a secretary. Like, I just, you know, schedule people's meetings. Like, or they're like, you know, look, man, I'm the janitor. Like, this is just a job for me. And that doesn't mean that they're not, you know, good people. It doesn't mean that they don't care about those things, but it does mean that they are intentionally or not, that's still like the company that they're working for is still doing those things. That's kind of how Ilfia looks at it, despite the fact that she doesn't see how problematic, like, when she goes down to get what she's ultimately doing is extortion, but in her mind, she's making an errand to go down to the village and pick up the money that they owe her dragon. She doesn't know that the reason they're giving her the money is because they are under threat of terrible, terrible violence. Because the town that Ilfia lives in, like, she doesn't really live in it because she lives up with her dragon and she comes down the mountain to go to the village. But that village has been decimated and destroyed a couple of times by that dragon. He's essentially their Smog, and this is Lake Town. And the generations have basically been like, all right, if we give this much to the dragon every month, the dragon doesn't burn our town to the ground.
So she ends up being a little bit more like one of the beleaguered people you might hear on the phone when you call the IRS, as opposed to Gaswin's approach, which is significantly more, you took out a loan from the shark that is my dragon and I'm here to collect.
So it seems to me, and obviously Gaswin's your character, not mine, so I can't speak to this, but it seems that there is a part of Gaswin, because he feels like his power was ripped away from him because of how he was brought into the priesthood by Nethrys. It feels much more like he sort of delights in exerting power using his dragon because he feels so powerless when his dragon is considered.
I could see that. So Ilfiel does not seem to have that same sort of feeling of powerlessness where it comes to her dragon.
Ilfiel has a very similar relationship to her dragon that Alita has with Alden, only significantly less paternal. Because Ilfiel was, her father was the dragon priest and her father raised her as a dragon priest. So for her, her dragon is like a, you know, great grandfather that the family takes care of and is the patriarch of the family. Like, the decisions that the dragon makes, or she's like, well, that's what he says to do, so that's what we have to do. She doesn't really think about it. And this came out a little bit when she was, you know, going after Chapman. She came out of the computer and fought Chapman himself. When she was going against Koza and she was talking about, you know, the issues with Koza, and I don't want to fight you, but I will. For her, the party, she doesn't think about, like, the fact that all of the chromatic dragons are causing all of these problems in Varian. She doesn't think about that because she's so focused on just the small amount of her world that is her job and her dragon. So she doesn't think about it on a grander scale. You guys, as the party, trying to bring back the metallic dragons is just putting her friends and her dragon and her family in danger. She's not thinking about, are we the baddies? She's thinking, you guys are trying. She doesn't even think about it in terms of right or wrong. Ilfiel is not a good aligned character. Ilfiel is a neutral aligned character, because for her, all she cares about is the people she cares about being safe or not in danger.
That makes sense. So you had mentioned that her dad had trained her to become a dragon priest since childhood. Mm-hmm. When did she become a dragon priest?
So she became an actual priest pretty much once she became an adult. Because her family is a generational priesthood, when the person they're training up, the child, comes of age, then they take on the responsibilities. There's kind of like a little bit of an apprenticeship dealio for a teeny bit. And then the previous priest retires.
Okay, that answers another question I was going to ask about, like, did her dad have to die before she took over?
For generational priests, not really. Okay. Now, there are dragons that have multiple priests at a time. It's not super de-duper common, especially because one of the things that dragon priests trust less than their dragon is each other. And if you have multiple priests working for the same dragon, there's a lot of suspicious deaths that happen. So while there are some dragons with multiple priests, most dragons are aware that their priests are going to kill each other. So they just, like, pick the one most competent one they can find. And that's their guy. And because Ilfiel's family, you know, passes the mantle. Now, this being said, they do not abandon the worship of the dragon. That would be big, big no-no.
Because sure.
If you have a dragon that does not require you to serve till death, they want you to find a replacement before you retire, because they're not going to be less. They're not going to have less followers. They're not going to be okay with losing their agent, because dragon priests for their individual dragon are like a weird combination of personal assistant and cleric. It is a combination of those two jobs.
They're sort of like the Alfred to the dragon priest, or the dragon's Batman.
A little bit, right down to the I'm willing to kill. So generally, if you are not like a generational priest and you don't take on an apprentice to train up into being your dragon's new priest, yeah, you're going to serve till you die. And that's also partially made by the fact that dragon priests don't tend to live very long in their careers.
Between the power struggles, the danger of the job in of itself, because they're dealing with other dragon priests and potentially other dragons, I can see there being a lot of risk involved in doing that job to begin with.
So the reason that dragon priests are accepted by dragons, like the reason that dragons are so willing to have their priests, other than, you know, who doesn't like being worshipped, is that the priests act as agents between the dragons so that things can be negotiated without bloodshed, without the loss of pride to the dragons. If you have a territorial dispute, a lot of times it results in the dragons trying to kill each other. If they are similarly aligned dragons, they can send their priests out to sort of negotiate with each other. Here's how we're going to do this. Now, the priests are also very incentivized to make sure that they are negotiating in the best interest of their dragon, because if they come back and they go, here's the agreement we have now, the dragon doesn't like it. You know, priests are very snackable. So there's a lot of incentive to make sure you are performing the best. But a lot of times the reason that the priests operate for their dragons the way that they do is so that the dragons don't have to look like they're giving up anything. They don't have to look like they're saving face. They don't have to look like they are conceding anything to one another. Because especially black, blue, and red dragons are particularly like really prideful. White dragons have a little bit less of a use for that, but that's a little bit, they're a little bit more, you know, the rule of the strong, historically.
White dragons also, in the tier of chromatic dragon powerfulness, aren't white dragons kind of like the little brother of the gang? So
from weakest to strongest, it is white, either blue or green. I can't remember which one comes next. Then it's black, then it's red.
Yeah, so white dragons, I imagine, have to be a little bit more subtle about how they do aggressive action.
But to answer the question overall, Ilfiel's childhood honestly looked a lot like Alita's.
Okay.
Because they both had a parent that was a priest that raised them into the priesthood. They are both incredibly sheltered with how they are seeing the world, because so much of their worldview was Alita in the Glade of the Nymphs and Ilfiel in her village. This is the whole world. This very small space is the whole world. And I've learned about space outside of this, but that's, you know, conceptual at best.
Sure.
And my dragon is trying to do the right thing, and I serve my dragon. My family has served this dragon, you know, so I serve this dragon. And obviously this dragon cares about us and is looking out for us. So
does that mean you were talking about how chromatic dragon priests are kind of incentivized to do exclusively what is best for their individual dragon? Does that mean that it's really rare to see something like what Emberlyn's currently pulling, where she's got a white dragon priest, a blue dragon priest, a red dragon priest, herself as a black dragon priest? I think she's even got like a good connection with a green dragon priest whose name, I know Gabe plays that character, Juden. But Juden, that's the one. Like, is it rare to see someone who's got that sort of like, not really
the power rangers of dragon priests?
Well, a little bit. I was thinking more like a loose alliance, because it seems like they're all still working towards their individual dragon's benefit, but it seems to be Emberlyn who's crafted this, like, I've got this big scheme and you only get to see little bits and pieces of it because I want to be the one who leads it.
So there are three answers to your question, sort of, because it touches on a couple of different things. One is what Emberlyn is actually doing. I cannot get into too much because that will spoil some stuff.
Well, I don't need you to get into specifics of what she's doing. More, my question is her pulling together a team of individuals from different dragons, is that something that's exceptionally rare in dragon priest circles, or is it something that happens, but maybe not to the scope that she's currently got?
It's not rare, but it seems a little bit like that. What you're saying is that because the dragons are always in strong competition with each other, the likelihood of the priests working together so much is conceivably rare. That's actually not the case for two reasons. One is that one of the biggest issues that you run into with dragons is territorial disputes, which would not lead to different types of dragon, like chromatic priests. Like, a white priest and a red priest are very unlikely to ever have beef because one lives in really warm mountains, the other lives in like snowfields. Like, there's not going to be a territorial dispute. There's not going to be competition for resource in the same area. You're far more likely to have competition between priests of the same color than anything else, because those dragons share a pool of resources and a pool of territory. You're way more in danger as a green priest interacting with other green priests than you are interacting with, like, Emberlyn or Gaswyn or Ilfiel.
Interesting. Okay, so it would actually make more sense for you to have friends who are different color dragon priests.
Pretty much, yeah. That is a safer bet than, like, there's not like a fraternity of red dragon priests that like hang out, have a meeting every month, and then go get beers. Like, that is more against the interests of their dragon than if they decided they were going to go hang out with a couple of blue dragon priests.
Got it. With the exception of if they are all serving the same dragon. I imagine, obviously, there's some incentive to work together in those cases. Unless, is the power pool that a dragon gives their priests, is it a shared resource to the point where you can only become so powerful if your dragon has several priests?
Yes. Dragons are not like gods. Despite the fact that the power pool is very similar, like the way that you draw energy from that entity, dragons are mortal creatures. They're ancient, long-lived, but they can be killed much more effectively and easily than a god can. Gods have an almost infinite power pool within their own, like, domains, whereas dragons have as powerful as they are. If you are a priest for a very young dragon, you're not going to have the kind of power that an ancient, like, the priest of an ancient dragon will. You just won't. So if you had a very young, you know, brass dragon, and you had two priests for that brass dragon, neither of them are going to be particularly dangerous. But if you had two priests for an ancient brass dragon, you're far more likely to have them be very threatening because there's a much greater power pool. But it is finite. And it is one of the other reasons why you don't really trust other members that worship the same dragon, because there is very little stopping them from hitting the apex of what they can do and then killing you so that they can get your part of the pie.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense. I had noticed that in the world, you don't hear a lot about dragons having several priests or even like whole priesthoods, which I thought was a little unusual, but this makes that make a lot of sense. It's because you're pulling from a finite resource. The dragon, I imagine, is only willing to give up so much of their own power because that in of itself is a risk. And then, so if you've got like five priests, they all have to share the 1/20th of power that the dragon is willing to sacrifice from their own authority.
Of all of the dragons that have been introduced in the game thus far, there is only one that is willing to relinquish every aspect of power that they have to their priest. It's not Alden.
I have a theory about who it is, but I don't know if I should say it out loud on account of, you know, this is going to be published on main feed.
I will say you having a theory doesn't, like, it's not me saying what's actually happening because you have no idea.
I mean, that's true. My theory is that it's Shyam, because Emberlyn seems significantly more powerful than any of the other dragon priests we've encountered. And also,
Emberlyn and Shyam have a notably different kind of relationship than most priests and dragons have with one another.
Yeah,
it's not romantic. I want to be very clear about that. Anytime I say something like, well, their relationship's really different, that's always something somebody jumps to. It's not romantic. I just dismiss that right out.
She's not in there dragon smooching?
She's not smooching her acid spitting dragon, no. The other thing that I will say is it has been revealed canonically that what Emberlyn's trying to do is bring back Tiamat.
Yes.
The reason so many of the priests are willing to work with her is because that is something that is in the interests of all chromatics.
Well, it was my understanding that most of the priests working with her were unaware of that fact until recently.
The priests that are working with her know more than the other priests for the most part, except Suter. I don't think Suter knew anything. I think Suter was told, go do this, and they were like, okay. The people that are working with Emberlyn, the Ilfiels, the Judens, the Gaswins, there is an interest for their dragons of bringing forth Tiamat, because the theory that they have is once Tiamat is back, the likelihood like Metallics can come back at all is really slim, because they will have the god brought into the world in a way that can protect them better than Tiamat can, sealed away.
I mean, that makes sense.
So when we're talking things like, why are they all helping her? It's because this is one of the few things that all chromatics can kind of get behind, as far as this will be beneficial to all of us.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that.
They worked together the same way during the war.
That also makes sense. There's something that's kind of nagging at me a little bit, which is earlier you were talking about how dragons aren't gods. But all of these priests, I mean, they could just as easily worship a god and not have the same complicating factors as if they were worshiping a dragon, like having other members of the exact same fraternity be potentially people who are going to stab them in the spine at a certain point in time. Are there benefits to being a dragon priest worshiper beyond being a god worshiper? Like, what makes you become a dragon priest instead of a cleric or a paladin?
So it depends on the person. Alita is... the reason Alita worshipped dragons and not the gods, other than she was raised in it, is because in her mind, the dragons are there. They have an investment in the material plane that the gods do not, and they are closer and kinder. Not chromatics, obviously, to her, but part of what she thinks will happen when the metallic dragons come back is that essentially every part of the world will have its own little god that actually cares about what happens to that space, that will actually protect that space.
Where I do distinctly recall her early in the campaign talking about gods in terms of like, oh yeah, because they're so useful.
she doesn't think that the gods care about anything outside of their own machinations. She doesn't think that the gods are invested in the material world. She doesn't think that the gods are invested in the people outside of their ability to be pawns. Whereas she can have a, well, she can't anymore, but she could have a conversation with Alden and, like, he would ask how her day's going. He would want to make sure she's doing okay. That's not something that she's going to do if she's a cleric of Tyr. Or Lythander. Yeah. Like, that's not gonna happen. So for her, the gods have all of the drawbacks of the dragons and very few of the perks. So it's a more materialistic, like, tangible, this is why they're better. So it's like why some people think that local governments are significantly more powerful in a practical sense than, like, higher tier governments, because they're directly influencing the space around them.
Well, and they can also take input directly from an individual citizen in a way that federal government just can't.
That was honestly one of the big things that Alita really wanted to bring back the Metallics for, was to have that kind of protection and that kind of attachment to that space. She just doesn't think you get that with the gods. When it comes to Emberlyn, she became a priest of Shyam out of a sense of a combination of gratitude and desperation. Ilfiel was raised as a priest of her dragon and doesn't see another direction. She was born to be a priest. It has never occurred to her to be anything else. And I don't mean that as, like, a good or bad thing. Like, I'm very neutral in Ilfiel's approach to her priesthood. She's just like, oh, yeah, I did this. My father did this. My grandfather did this. Obviously, I'm next. Like, that's how this works. Whereas Gaswyn was forced into his priesthood by threat of death. So all of the priests have their own things. Juden, I can't speak for Gabe on this one, but from when I've seen him play Juden, my guess is that Juden has this attachment to the beauty of what the chromatics are and that raw natural power that they, especially green dragons, show in the world. I think that that's something that moves Juden very deeply. I think that Suter just... I can't speak for Alon. I can't speak for how you guys play your priests.
I also, it seems like Suter and as Eek, it's hard to say what exactly their motivations would be, because we've seen so little of them interacting with their dragons, mm-hmm. or even, like, in an authoritative as dragon priests sense.
I think that what brings people to worshiping chromatic dragons is their own thing individually. There is not really a here's, like, I can tell you why most people that become a cleric of Illmater probably become a cleric of Illmater. Like, there's a consistent thread in people who are drawn to that. The thing is that draconic worship is so specific to the dragon themselves that bringing yourself into their priesthood is going to be a deeply personal thing. There are priests who have not appeared, but there are, like, historically and canonically, there are priests who have been raised by their dragons, so they think of their dragon as their parent, and that's how they're their priest. There are dragons who were saved by someone, like, they got terribly injured and the person took care of them, so the dragon was like, I'm now bringing you on as my priest so I can give you powers, gratitude for what you've done for me. There are times where a dragon has just been like, I like you, yoink! Which is kind of what happened with N'Three. She kind of was just like, you're cute, you're mine.
Yeah, it's a little bit Gaswyn's situation. Yeah,
you don't have, like, Char coming down and going, you're gonna be my priest now, you're a cleric of me now. Like, you don't really have that, which also plays into Alita's feeling that the gods don't care. Dragons will specifically seek out, not all of them, but a lot of them will, like, seek out, like, you are worth my attention, you are worth helping me and being my priest. whereas gods just kind of wait for you to come to them.
That makes sense. Okay. I think we're just about out of time for this episode. Are there any closing thoughts you'd like to put out there around Chromatic Priests or around Ilfiel herself?
Ilfiel specifically is not a bad person, and I put her in QPR as an antagonist and as an ally of Emberlyn to show that there is so... The Chromatics have been in power for so long that the horrible stuff they've done has been so normalized that even a person who seems very kind and very good completely overlooks how atrocious some of the stuff is now.
That makes sense. It's almost like a cultural thing at this point, as opposed to something someone terrible is doing.
It's just been normalized.
All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us. We will be back. We're going to be trying to do more of these on a more regular basis. Obviously, things have been crazy for Alex and I, especially recently. So we're really excited to get back into exploring some of the deeper lore of the podcast. And in a case like this week, giving Gabe a little bit of a break and doing something that's a little bit simpler than all of the sound effects and beautiful music and just exceptional audio editing that has to go into the other episodes, because Gabe would settle for nothing less.
Also, if you have any questions or anything that you want us to cover on Nalarian Archive, please, please tell us.
Yeah, we're excited to talk about a wide range of stuff, but if there's stuff you all want to hear about, we would gladly explore those topics. So let us know. All right, thanks y'all. Bye.